Good morning or afternoon or evening, whenever you're listening to this episode of Football 52. This is episode 9 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb and myself of Football 52. Coach, great to have you in studio as always. You guys are in the middle of spring practice, so we're getting into, not the thick of it, but we're getting into the thick of spring at least.
Yeah, and last week, the NCAA has some rules about how many practices that we need to have helmets only, and general consensus is start out the first two practices of 15 helmets only. And so that's kind of a hurry up, let's get ready and go, but don't go too fast or too hard.
Hurry up
for the
and
players, it can be frustrating there not to be able to compete. But our third actually, fourth practice of the week was last Saturday, and that was full pads with live tackling periods. There were some 11-on-11 scrimmage. There was what we call the big sky tackling drill. On the football field, the big sky logo is I should have prepared better for this, but it's whatever the shape is where a rectangle has on the two opposing sides, the parallel sides, one of them is smaller than the other, and so it's kind of I want to say it's almost a triangle with like a flat top. Is that a better way to describe it?
Yeah, I got it pulled up there.
Okay. And on the it actually makes a really good kind of funnel. Or boundaries of a drill where a runner would have to either break into the open field towards the wide side of the funnel and the tackler would have an open field tackle, or get into a smaller space and try to cross the smaller side of the logo. And so that's a drill we've been doing since my days back at Southern Utah. We call it Big Sky Tackling Drill. And that was a blast for our players and coaches. And we got 108 live tackle football reps. And not a single injury of any significance. You know, there's a ton of hangnails and bruises and stuff like that, and that's part of football and part of the excitement of football. But anytime you go live as a coach and as a player, there's a risk there. Glad to come out of that unscathed.
Yeah, this is probably a stupid question, Coach, but how hard are they going? You know, because I always think of spring, and just like you said, injuries. If they can get hurt in a game, they can get hurt in practice. So these guys are going pretty much 100%, right?
Yeah, I mean, we call it smart life when we're practicing against our own team, and that's a lecture that the guys get before we ever stepped on the field for that type of tempo during practice. And smart life means it's just like a game against an opponent that you don't know, and you're competing for everything you've got. You're leaving it all out on the field, except if your teammate's in a vulnerable position. And so, you know, what we would call that is if a guy's stretched out up in the air, we're going to lay off that hit. And the coaches are going to do their part and make a whistle on that. Like, hey, we saw the defender lay off. If sometimes you see a tackler droop down to the ankle level, and in a game, you might have to alligator roll that ankle just to get the guy down. Nobody wants to do that. It's not how we teach tackling, but you got to get the guy down, and he's fighting for extra yardage. And so a defender, again, has the onus to kind of lay off of that one. And we never want to go – I mean, it's illegal anyway, but we never want the runner or the tackler to go crown of their head, square on to the thick – right through the cylinder of a player. You know, we want to make sure that we're glancing blows towards leverage and that we're using our teammates on defense. It's – you know, in the end, it's one guy taking care of the other 21 on the field, every guy taking care of the other 21 guys on the field.
How excited does everybody get for hitting? Because I remember back when I played, you know, again, small town USA high school football, I was one of those guys that was always really nervous when I found out, oh, it's full pads, it's hitting day. And all the seniors would run around and say, it's full pads, let's go. And as a freshman, you're like, I'm not as excited as everybody else about hitting. I'm more like, I want the ball to run to the end zone somehow. I'm not crazy about the hitting side. How excited does everybody get? Are there some, and is that normal for some of the guys to kind of be like, all right, I got the butterflies here for, you know, when we get into this full pad situation?
I think it absolutely is a spectrum of confidence. You know, when you talk about through that spectrum of the team, which guys are truly excited, which guys are participating in the kind of verbal hype, like to try to get themselves excited, and which guys are going, what the heck's going on here? You know, like, I'm not that excited about this, and I've lived that. That's what drew me to football. I was more accomplished and had more college opportunities and offers in other sports, But I was new to football. I didn't start playing until I was a sophomore in high school. And that, you know, the physical challenge of football was something that I wasn't comfortable in. I recognized that. And then I saw a little bit of growth. And I was like, I want to keep doing this because it makes me feel a certain type of way. There's an excitement there.
So that's good to hear, too, that they're still human out there because you wonder that, you know, is everybody just ready to go? Because, again, we think of football players and we always just think, I think a lot of people think of the prototypical like middle linebacker. That's what all football players look like. There's a lot of DBs out there. There's a lot of running backs out there. There's a lot of skill guys, wide receivers that maybe aren't, you know, thinking about hitting and being hit throughout the course of practice, too. They're thinking about avoiding those tackles. So sometimes it can be exciting for a good chunk of them and maybe a little nerve-wracking for others.
You know, one of the things we can all relate to, if you remember in the movie Braveheart, the speech,
great movie.
Right, what William Wallace makes. Yeah. And before that, I think that William Wallace speech was patterned after the Henry V, St. Crispin's Day speech, right? And so, you know, in both of those instances, you've got an outmanned army. You've got a lot of guys demotivated, thinking they're marching to their death, right? And then here's this leader that comes forward and establishes. And I actually like the Shakespeare one. You know, I'm outing myself here as an English major, but in the St. Crispin's Day speech, Henry V in Shakespeare says, you know, I want not one man more. The fewer men, the greater share. And he starts to rally this small group of guys from like certain death to, okay, wait, no, we want this. This is, our names are going to live forever. We're going to be famous. We're going to defend our country, you know, whatever the cause is. And I think that's exactly what goes on in football practice to a small part.
We're going to be careful. I know we're going to end up talking about individual names when we get to depth charts and all that. But I'm curious, who is more like that William Wallace, Mel Gibson / character on the team? Who is that guy? Are there several guys that are up and maybe they're seeing a few guys over here in the corner not sure about things and they're like, you know what, I got to get up and rally the troops. Coaches do that, but it always helps when you have a handful of players that can do that.
You know, I'm really glad you asked that because I'm sitting here as I hear your question thinking, oh man, I just kind of maybe gave the impression that there's a guy marching up and down our sidelines like William Wallace. Now, I think in football, maybe everybody can relate to this that's listening that's been in football. I think in football, it's the guy's posture it's the guy walking around with confident posture. It's the guy standing in front of the line. It's the silent assassin, you know, and that's, I think that's what inspires everybody.
That's the more powerful motivator.
Yes. And I think that sometimes some of the guys that are a little more vocal and there is like the science, you know, there's a science behind a glottal roar. Like our adrenaline rises, like we become more prepared to do something hard when we make noise, when we roar, when we get excited, when we excite people next to us. There's a science behind that, but there's also a science behind butterflies. You know, you got butterflies in the stomach. That's your body getting ready to do something hard. And you know, courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is being willing to face your fear, to step through that threshold. And I think that's what a team is looking for: is how many guys on this team are just unflinching right now.
Yeah.
Excited, intense, ready to go.
I love the fact that you, Coach, I think you and I are just we're bonding more and more over this too. You mentioned Braveheart. Yeah. I'm going to get all in. Although I'll say, I love watching that movie. I've seen it millions of times. I've seen it. I get to the part, of course, where right before he's captured, essentially. And then I'm like, I can't do it. I've done it before. But after that part, I'm pretty much out. Even though there's more inspirational parts after William Wallace dies in that movie, there's still some good moments, but man, I can't get past that part.
Yeah, I agree. There are some downers there, but you know, I like, you can put them all together: The Patriot and Braveheart.
Oh, that's a good one too.
Yeah,
that's,
but
sensational.
Just such similar themes that you know, we can all relate to. You know, fear, being outmanned, trying to accomplish something that seems impossible.
I always ask this question on my regular show, Coach. You know, when I get coaches on about spring ball, and it's kind of just the scripted question, right? What are you looking for during spring practice? And I want to be this opportunity to get a little deeper into that because it's always phenomenal to me because it's April 3rd. You're going to get a lot from spring, but they're also going to go away for a little bit. We talked about the timelines and everything. I think last show, they're going to go away for a little bit. And it's not like you have this, you know, just every single day you're leading up to, you know, August and you're getting into training camp. So is there a part of you that has to look at spring ball? Like, yeah, I'm looking for things, but I'm also not going to let it be the end all be all.
Yeah. I've talked about this a little bit before. I kind of showed you my version, which I would consider fairly elementary at this point in our program compared to John Wooden's version of the pyramid of success. But the top two blocks of those, I've taken liberties and changed quite a bit of our pyramid that I think is relatable and more to our situation. But the top two blocks are the same. It's confidence and poise. And that's what I'm looking for from our team and during spring. And I think underneath all that is fundamentals, mastery of technique, mastery of our playbook. Like there definitely are more detailed things that I'm looking for on a daily basis and judging, and we're talking about as a staff with our players and amongst each other. But in the end, I'm looking for more true confidence and more true poise. And I can kind of paint a picture of that in my mind, but I don't know that there's a hard litmus test. Like, how do you measure confidence and poise? Well, I want the team fights to go down. That's not confidence and poise, right? How do we compete at full speed without a lot of, side bickering and fights? I had to take a guy out of a drill, a guy that's had a really good off-season conditioning period. He's coming into his own as a young player. We expect him to play a significant role this year, but he took a swing, at the end of a play, and that would get him kicked out of a game. That's not confidence and poise. And a learning opportunity for that guy. He's still going to play a big role this year. It doesn't diminish at all what he's accomplished. But we got to be on the lookout for those types of things to accomplish what we want to accomplish.
I want to ask the question in a moment too, just about like maybe that changes every year. Is there a certain position group or a certain couple of guys that you're like, hey, spring ball's more important for these guys than it is perhaps for this group? And I want to get into that in a moment. But you talk about a guy taking a swing in practice or in spring practice. What is that process like? How do you diffuse that? Because we've all been there. We've all seen it. When anger just gets to that point, you're kind of not the same person for a brief moment. So you obviously want to do your best not to make the situation or escalate the situation. So you as a coach, that's a pretty delicate situation to get into, is how to handle that.
Absolutely. All players know what it feels like to be in that moment, especially during practice, because we don't always have officials there. And so typically the coaches are seeing, and I know this was the case yesterday too, I saw the retaliation. The swing was the retaliation, and it wasn't retaliation for being blocked really well. It was the offensive lineman probably got the hands up in the face or held or something, just did something that would maybe be a penalty in a game. But the reality is a ton of stuff goes uncalled in games. That is part of football, probably part of most sports, most competitive sports, especially contact sports. There's just a lot going on out there. Seven officials aren't going to be able to accurately get 100% of the calls correct. And so we've got to have that confidence, that poise, and more importantly, how do we channel that frustration into something positive rather than the release of something negative? It's no different than taking, letting our vices control us. It's a short term feeling of release instead of fighting for what you want long term with discipline.
Do you try to put that out quickly? You see, okay, these guys are going at it. There's the swing. Bam, I'm jumping in. Because you see those movies where the coach is like, let them go, or whatever, like whatever that is. And then they just beat the heck out of each other for a while. And then it's like some guy walks in later. Okay, boys, break it up. Well, they're both like passed out at that stage. Do you try to get in there quickly and say, all right, we're seeing it. There's the swing. Boom, bust in, separation.
Yeah, well, it's a really good question you ask. I can remember at some point here this last season, a season that, I'm struggling. I'm losing makes you doubt. And Colorado started off really hot. And Coach Prime was one of my, heroes when I was growing up. He was a player in his prime, right? And now I don't know. I might get the details wrong here, but I think there was some fighting going on at their practice.
Sure,
last year. And he started saying, well, yeah, I want to let them fight. I want everybody to step away, and I'm going to keep receipts. And I'm like, geez, that to me, that's the antithesis of responsible coaching to me. Mm-hmm. But I had to take a hard look at myself, like, should I be doing that, right? Like, here's a coach that when I hear him speak, I often can see wisdom there. I can see that competitiveness. Here's a guy that competed at the top of not one professional game, but two. this guy understands some things, right? And he's right over here you know, as our neighbor and as on a coaching level, if we're not playing teams like that, like there's a relationship there where we can say, hey, can I come over and talk? And so I'm kind of wandering through all these thoughts, and in the end decided, no, like I've had my share of success in this business. I stand for certain things and I got to be me. And if that's him and that's him, his program, he's got to do him. And I respect that, but I'm going to do me. And my way is like, we play with confidence and poise. We don't fight during practice. If it's not allowed in the game, we're not going to practice it.
Well, and I think that's a great point too. You bring that up because, you know, in a perfect world, in the movies, for example, guys will get in a fight and then they show them all their best buddies now. It doesn't always work that way. Guys get in a fight, that might stay there. In the NBA, for example, Draymond Green goes up in practice and knocks Jordan Poole out pretty much. That never got better. Those two never got right. And then one of them ended up having to leave. So I think, yeah, sure, maybe that works in some instances. But for the most part, I believe that you get guys in a fight, maybe that sticks with them. And that's something that's just there all the time, unfinished business. I've seen Cortland Sutton and Emmanuel Sanders with the Broncos. They said at the time they got better and they were over it. I don't think those guys ever truly got over it. So I kind of like that strategy that you're talking about. It's like, let's get in there. Let's break this up quickly before it gets worse.
And really, it's you know, I mean, I've got to realize the things I can control. So I want to draw the line on encouraging fighting. I'm not going to encourage it.
Yeah.
You know? But if it's happening in practice, there's not a whole lot that I can do about it. So I do hope that end result is, okay, did these guys get something out of their system? Do they talk later in the locker room? You know, one of the things I'll do sometimes if I see some fighting in practice, I'll call those two guys up at the end of practice and say, dance off, give us a beat. You know, hey, team, give us a beat. These guys got to dance it off. And I'm trying to bring a little bit of, okay, all right, that was then. I hope you guys had it out of your system. We do not carry this into the locker room. You carry something into the locker room or onto campus, you're not part of our team. You know, yeah. There are serious consequences for that. So there's definitely, I think every coach has to realize, okay, we step out there on the practice field or in the game, we're not exactly living, you know, a civilian lifestyle here for that period of time. What are the new rules? And as a coach, I have to set those.
Coach, on the other point too, I think that's fascinating stuff too, that line you have to walk. When you get into spring ball, and obviously this being your second one with UNC, does it change from year to year where, okay, this is the focus for spring ball here? Or is there a position group that you sit down with your coaching staff and you guys are going through everything and saying, hey, we need to be looking out for this competition, this position group, or this group of guys? Maybe they struggled in workouts before we got into spring ball, but we're going to really kind of hone in, obviously paying attention to the entire team, but there's going to be a position group or a group of guys that you're really going to focus on.
You name the position group, and I can tell you who the experienced guys are who have made winning plays in games, right? And I can tell you the depth of that position group from an experiential standpoint. I can tell you the depth of that group from a standards standpoint. Like, we have standards of what a college football player, how they should move, how strong they should be, their body weight, their intelligence level. And I can tell you all that if we went into the details of each position. And so the goals for each position change rapidly. Like, we have right now, we've got a defensive line that is just 100% committed to their craft. I mean, they stay after every weight session. The D-line is lingering, doing something either on the field or still in the weight room, and they put pressure on each other. Mm-hmm. There's a guy on the defensive line, one of our guys, Brooks Miley, and Coach Hill, our strength coach, was kind of, you know, like calling him out in front of the team for something positive. He said, you know, Brooks is so into this thing that if one of the defensive linemen isn't there, he's walking around going, hey, coach, where's this guy? Like, you know, because sometimes guys have, whatever, you got a dentist appointment, you got something going on, you have to go to a different weightlifting session. Our weight room's not big enough to hold 120 players, so we have different sessions throughout the day. And then Brooks also came up to him one day and said, hey, coach, just want to let you know, Marcus is going through some stuff over here in the training room. He'll be a little bit late. He's doing what he can. Like, players don't normally do that.
He's looking out for a guy like that, right? Yeah. I mean, he's giving you the updates, and he's also making sure he's holding other guys accountable too.
Yeah, and the offensive line. You know, we're going to be a team built around the bigs. Eventually, that's what we're building here. We're gonna build an on field bully, a bigger, stronger team than the rest of the teams in the conference, and it's got to start with the offensive and defensive line and the progress that offensive line has made physically. and mentally over the last year. I really feel like we are getting to the point where we can count on our bigs to carry us in games.
Well, I know it's April 3rd, and I'm going to ask you this probably 14 more times, you know, over the course of these podcasts, but is the defensive line, is that the position group right now that's leading as far as the strength of your football team?
I think from top to bottom, when you talk about having a complete number of guys bought in, every player on our team is going through their individual journey of joining a new organization, stepping up a level from high school, resetting goals, right? Like the goal at one time was just maybe to get a scholarship or to play college football. Well, how quickly do you reset your goals? Because that goal's already been accomplished. If you're just sitting back saying, I've made it, there's not going to be a lot of success at the college football level, right? So you got to reset both a long-term goal and a short-term goal. What do you see yourself as a college football player eventually? But what can you do this year? What can you do this month? What can you do today to get better? And I think our defensive line is really there from the top to the bottom of that depth chart. I think Coach Fernandez does a tremendous job of just making sure that everybody understands their role, and he's humble enough to say, I might be wrong on your role. I might be underestimating you here, but here's where you're at. Mm. And I think that sometimes a young coach, as young coaches, all of us, we hesitate to tell a guy, hey, look, you're not just in the two deep here. There's four defensive linemen on the field, so eight guys are in the two deep. But really, what the player needs to know, who's number eight? And then who's number five? Number five is the next guy in.
Sure.
Number five is knocking at the door. Number eight, that's a different spot to be in, right? And so you don't want your team thinking, I'm in the two deep. I'm on track. I'm a freshman, sophomore. No, like you're number eight. And number nine is right on your tail, and I think Coach Fernandez, with his experience on both sides of the ball, his experience as a player, the growth that I've seen, over the last 15 years of knowing him, I think he just does a tremendous job of that. And that's a big part of why that D-line is where they're at.
How hard is it? I love that dynamic in sports too. You're a team. You want to support, you're supporting as much as you can. You're supporting each other, but you're also, especially now in spring ball, you're competing. You talk about 8 to 9. Yeah, 9's got to be supporting 8, but he also wants to he wants to move up. Yep. And then 8 wants to move up and 5 wants to get into that starting role. That to me is one of the more, and we talk about it with quarterbacks all the time, but it's true with every single position in football. These guys are supporting each other, but they're trying to take each other's job at the same time.
I heard it first from Kalani Sitake when I was working for him. The space that's there when there's a lack of communication, that space is naturally filled with negativity. If a player or a coworker, a peer, a spouse, a family member, whatever, if there's not communication, then the tendency is to fill that with something negative or potentially something negative. And that's why it's so important to tell these guys exactly where they're at. That way they're not begrudging it. If the player is reacting after a game or after a practice and say, Coach, I didn't get all those reps. Why aren't I getting the reps? That's the negativity. If a player knows exactly how many reps he's going to get. If a player knows exactly what his scheduled contribution is going into a game. Okay, now I think that player can much more easily wrap his mind around, let me maximize that. Mm-hmm. I don't need to hate on the player that's in front of me, right? That's because I know he's in front of me. I'm not finding that out during practice. I knew that yesterday. What am I doing to overtake that other player?
Have you experienced that or found players where it's difficult for them to support the other one in front of them? Like maybe on the outside, they're saying, yeah, but deep down they're like, that guy, I got to get that guy, man.
For me, I'm so shaped by my playing experience, especially in football because I was so late to the game and it was all new to me and I always felt like I was trying to play catch up. I knew I wanted to be a coach from a young age. I had some really coaches, from my dad who coached me when I was really young, right? He wasn't really necessarily an athlete when he was younger. I played a little junior college football, was a track guy, loved sports. But he wasn't a professional coach, right? Mm-hmm. He was out making a living running a construction company. And so, but I can remember him coaching me and then how important sports was to him. And then that became important to me, And then I had coaches along the way who were just great role models of what it means to be a man and to care about a person and care about a person achieving. And so I always knew I wanted to be a coach, but I didn't know I wanted to be a football coach until really I was in college. And I felt like one of the things that I could do better than the coaches that were coaching me was communicate better. I can remember having a meeting like my junior year where a coach gave me some information, some feedback that he could have given me a long time ago, and he didn't. And so I never had a chance to change it. And you know, maybe I should have known. I still really admire that coach. He's a mentor, taught me a lot of different things. But I can just remember that moment still like it was yesterday and thought, I'm being held back because I didn't have good information. I always want to give that information. My core fundamental philosophy as a head football coach or a position coach, if I'm thinking it, you deserve to know it. And I'm not going to wait. The next time I see that guy, it's coming out. Mm-hmm. Whether that's criticism, whether that's positive, it's coming out. I'm going to let him know.
I think, and I love that too, because I'm definitely one of those guys, and I know I work with a lot of people here and clients, whatever. Get that information out there. If there's something looming, you know, you want guys to know where they stand. And I think that's so important. That's so powerful when it comes to coaching. Coach, coming up April 16th, we've got the different portal window starting up. And I know that's significant, but they do that purposefully. So it's after spring ball and guys kind of know where they stand. They know if they're going to be a big part of the team. Maybe they don't want to be at number 9 on that list or 8 on that list when we're talking position group. That's a big date coming up.
It is a big date. And I use it, I talk about it almost every day in my meetings with the whole team. We talk about the portal, talk about the portal window. I'm presenting our culture. I'm really pushing hard. And sometimes it doesn't feel very good to be pushed. And if it's not feeling good to you,
yeah,
you need to be looking at April 16th as your opportunity to get out of here. If you're feeling like, you know, that I'm motivating you, that I'm helping you, that I'm making you better, that I'm on the right track, that our program's on the right track, this is the spot for you, man. And I'm always going to be behind you. I'm going to be pushing you, but I'm not going away. So, you know, if you have this hope that things are just going to get easier or that I'm going to change or that I'm going to relax, that's not there right now. And so I don't know that every coach is kind of doing that. I think a lot of coaches are a little fearful of the portal. I see the portal as an opportunity to get those who are not bought in to walk out the door on their own.
I think that's interesting too, because you look at spring ball for some could be like, hey, we want to just make sure everybody's happy and good. And that way, you know, whenever spring ball's over, I can let my mind take a break and not have to worry about that. You're viewing it as, all right, I want to make sure in this period here, and then once we're out of April 16th, I've got the guys ready to ride with me and this coaching staff so we can turn this thing around next year.
I just spoke with my entire staff. You know, we have a morning staff meeting every morning. I just spoke with them yesterday about putting pressure on every guy in the roster that's not running themselves. We've got a philosophy here, you run you. Mm. In other words, you know, like, you know, does the strength coach, does he push you around? Does he run you? Does the head coach push you around? Does he run you? Your position coach, the academic coordinator, right? There's a lot of people here that can kind of put pressure, and that's our job to do that. But in the end, you know, for a true player that's on their way to true manhood, you run you. And we've got a group of players on this team that run themselves and understand what that means. And they don't need, you know, from an academic standpoint, from a body weight standpoint, from a strength standpoint, fitness standpoint, they're on point with everything. Citizenship, right? And then there's other guys who still need a push. And what I told our staff yesterday morning at our staff meeting was, let's identify and communicate exactly who needs those pushes, and we're going to start bringing them in earlier in the morning. We're going to make things really uncomfortable here for those that need it leading up to the portal date. Because I want guys to either recognize the pressure that we're putting on and say to themselves, man, this is exactly what I needed. I feel great. I'm up. I'm in study hall. I'm at morning weights. I'm at breakfast. You know, whatever we feel like the pressure that they need is according to where they're struggling in life. And they're grateful for it and they want to stay and they're more bought in. Or they say, this sucks.
Yeah. What is the feeling you're getting right now when you look at, I think we talked about, last week we talked a lot about the off the field stuff and the focus of making the main thing, but also not doing some, you know, extracurricular activities out off the football field. This time around, when you're talking about spring ball, all the workouts that led to this point, all the workouts that continue to go, what's the buy-in process like? How are you feeling about the number of guys that you think April 16th might not be much of anything?
Great question. comparing a year ago to right now, I feel so good about where this team is. I stand in front of the team, and I'm so proud of them as a group, what they've accomplished. And I think of where I was a year ago, and especially about when we got about mid-season last year and the frustration was mounting and we're losing these games, close games, we're getting better. I can see that there's ability on the team. I can see that our coaches are grinding and like we're matching up from a strategy standpoint, but we're just not getting over the hump. And then I started to dig a little deeper and find out, I didn't know these guys. Hmm. I didn't know this type of off-field habit was there. And some of the players started to get more with me. They were communicating. They were opening up about the problems we have off the field. And I just didn't. I was completely caught off guard with how little commitment we had to being an athlete as a team. That level of commitment as a team has just risen dramatically. And yet, there are still guys who are trying to fight it. There are still guys who are listening to me every time I speak to the team and saying, I can prove him wrong. Mm. I can still do the booze thing and I can still not get enough sleep. I can still stay out. I can still do my party. I can still be a bad student and be a good football player. And I'm like, I keep reminding them, maybe you can. Yeah, I think maybe you can. I mean, I don't know that way. I haven't experienced that. But I'm going to make it uncomfortable on you. And do you really want to be here and try to do that? You know, that's what we're trying to get across right now.
How much of that, too, is where you look at the past and say, hey, guys, I'm sorry, but last year, the year before that, whatever you were doing, it didn't work. It wasn't working. And I know last year is a new year. You're just trying to figure this whole thing out. Everyone's getting to know each other. How much of that do you use when you're talking to some of those guys that are like, I can still be good at this? And then do keep up with all my other weird habits, stay up till 2 a.m, 3 a.m, whatever. Do you use a lot of the past and say, hey, guys, whatever we were doing wasn't working, so we got to go extreme here?
I try to be real careful about bringing in past seasons. Okay. It's a different group of guys. And a lot of those guys, when I talk about the team being a lot more committed, a lot of those guys are gone through graduation, through portaling out, through us pressuring them to portal out. There were all kinds of individual dynamics why the team changes year to year, and every college football team changes a lot year
Big
to year,
time.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but I really make a big effort not to bring up anything in the past without first taking my own responsibility for the past. Like I am cut. I was trained by the first coach I worked for. He always said, "I can beat theirs with mine, and I can beat mine with theirs." And that stuck with me. Like, okay, like the highest aspiration of a coach is you can flip rosters and still win. And that's like a total game day playbook guru type of philosophy, right? But I think it doesn't need to be taken that way. It can also be like, okay, how quickly can you get a group of guys on your side and rowing and fighting in the same direction? And I just always want to make sure that any loss, I mean, we had one mistake in a critical moment in a game last year that cost us a game. It happened three different games, where it was just like I could point to that, talk about it, and any football person would recognize, oh my gosh, that play cost you the game, that decision cost you the game. And it's never one thing that cost you a game, but this was a big thing, and anyone would recognize that. And I'm not gonna talk about the exact moments. And even through those moments, I can find so many mistakes that I made in those games that wouldn't have made that moment the one that everybody would point to. And so I got to make sure and take responsibility before I start pointing to, any individual's behavior on our team a year ago that led us to a winless season. I've got behavior that led us to a winless season. I've got mistakes. I've got things that I need to own first. And so, I try not to go there too often because I think it's been communicated.
Well, and that's a good point too. These guys know. I mean, they know. They probably know. I don't know if they know the history of UNC football backwards and front, but they know. I mean, if you come to this school, you have an idea. I would imagine people look at past success or records and whatnot. They at least know that portion. So maybe that's just one of those things that we don't need to say it. On the portal side too, Coach, how, April 16th again, I know that'll be an interesting show. That'll be a good podcast. What is that process like? Do they come to you and say, I'm thinking about it? Do they say, I'm doing it? Or do they just do it and then you find out? Because I've heard stories where guy just enters the portal and never really talked to the coach first.
I haven't had any players enter the portal without talking to me. It does happen. I would see that as a major failure on my part if a player didn't come to me, because I'm so open about, hey, the portal's a great thing for college football. Coaches come and go. There are better opportunities, better fits for some guys out there. If you need to go, here's my platform. Here's what I'm trying to do for you. I care about you each as people. Your value as a person is by far and away incomparably bigger than your value as a football player to this team, right? I want everybody to know that. And I think I do come across that way. I've seen that. Players will come to me and say, hey, you know, coach, I think there's a better spot for me, and I just wanted to let you know in person. And I really appreciate that. We can walk. The way I see it in my mind anyway is we're walking kind of arm in arm through that portal together. Okay, now I'm going to make some calls for you. I'm going to help you out. You know, we had some guys, probably the two best guys that landed last year from the portal to elsewhere. Nick Norris went to Oregon State, the defensive line coach at Oregon State. Mm. We worked together at BYU. He's one of my best friends in not just in football, but in life. Lasso Tuiaki, right? Nick probably wasn't even aware of that relationship or aware of the behind the scenes communication that was happening. And then Spence Nowinski is the defensive coordinator at Ohio, and Dustin Johnson ended up going to Ohio. Well, Spence Nowinski was my D-line coach when I was the defensive coordinator at Idaho. Like these players don't always see the connections there. But once a player wants to walk through that portal door, I don't want to keep them at that point. If they think there's something better out there, they don't belong here anymore. At that point, I want to help them.
If you get the guys that maybe, because there's going to be guys on the roster right now that I'm sure you probably already know, that you would look at and say, yeah, I would not be shocked April 16th they come and talk to me. If you get a guy that you're not expecting to go in, what's that process? Do you try to convince them otherwise? Or do you think, no, if that's already in their brain, I'm not going to try to convince them to stay?
Yeah, I think at that point, their ability to withstand struggle, their toughness in this program is done.
Great.
Yeah.
I'll make some calls for you, but we're not going to have this long conversation where I'm going to beg you to stay.
Yeah. I mean, if a guy came in and said, hey, coach, I want to talk about options. I like it here. I respect where you're going, but I have this other option. You know, like I'm down for that struggle and that conversation
Does that bother you though, that they're kind of on the fence and they come in and they say, hey, coach, I love it here, but there's also a part of me that's looking at maybe a different opportunity. What does that do for your brain? Or do you really go in and understand that dilemma?
Well, you know, I've already outlined this for the players as a whole team. I mean, I've already communicated, hey, what's the threshold for walking? If you're happy here, if you feel like you're developing, if you feel like you want UNC to be successful and you want to be part of the catalyst for that, okay, what's the threshold of when you should leave for an NIL deal or a different opportunity? And what I'm telling these guys is, hey, fellas, don't go walk through this door to a Mountain West school for tens of thousands of dollars in your lifetime, your development as a college football player, your contribution, your ability to look back and know that what experiences constituted your life, that's not worth it. Now, if you can develop to the point right here at UNC where you've got an opportunity to go into the portal and get hundreds of thousands of dollars,
right,
go to a Power 5 school, play in, or Power 4, I guess it is now, play in front of, you know, hundreds of thousands of fans on national television throughout the season. Okay, that's a life changer. And if our program at the FCS level, while this NIL and transfer portal continues as it's currently set up, I absolutely want to be the coach that's not fighting that. I don't want to be like the coaches in the old days who were fighting against players being drafted after their sophomore and junior year. Like, I can remember when I was playing, there were coaches fighting against that. They wanted to change the NFL rules for when a player can be drafted. And, you know, now nobody talks about that. And I think right now, to fight against the transfer portal, to fight against NIL, like, I'll let other guys do that. Well, all I'm looking at is what can I control. I want to be a true stoic about the portal and about NIL and give guys good advice. Don't go from being a meaningful contributor, a leader at UNC, to go in and providing depth for somebody at the group of five level and acting like, you know, $12,000 or $22,000 is going to change your life. It's not.
Yeah, it's going to be nice for the moment. You have $12,000, but that's going to go away quickly. And if you're, again, if you transferred and you went over to this other school, now you got to redo everything. You got to redo all those relationships, get to know those coaches more. You got to battle it out more. That coach that got you, whether that Mountain West school, they're viewing you as depth, probably, for the most part, coming here and battle. You almost have to restart for whatever that looks like as far as NIL. So I think that's, I think those conversations are so impactful on these guys. But knowing you're coming at it from, hey, if you can come in though and suddenly Power Four schools looking at you and there's different kind of money, okay, let's have those conversations. It's got to be tough. Those have got to be difficult conversations to have.
I told the team like this: if you get to that point of development and you've given everything you've got here, I will help you get there. I can give you names of coaches that I can call. I can open up my phone right now and show you Power Five head football coaches that I've worked with, they've worked for me. We will get you where you need to go with the money that you need to get to, because, and I told the team this too, just about a week ago, you look around this room, you see these freshmen, sophomores in here and the next class that we've signed, there's another you coming up. And so if you feel like you've accomplished everything you need to accomplish here, hey, let's build an amazing story that the guy sitting right next to you in this room and right behind you on the depth chart can say, whoa, you can do that from here? Mm. I want to do that too. And if that's just our current reality in terms of NIL and portal, then you know that's the way I see it. That's the strategy I see. We're just we're recruiting and developing and preparing ourselves to be as good as we can be under the current rules.
Coach, let's talk about some coaches here a bit, and going off of some of your bullet points that we went over last night. The offensive line and tight end coach. Let's kind of get into some of the dynamics there, because I know you wanted that to be a topic of discussion.
Yes. So Blair Peterson was our offensive coordinator last year, and Blair had worked with me at BYU and was the coordinator down at Southern Utah when I hired him here. And Spencer Patterson had worked with both of us at BYU, was part of our offensive staff at BYU in an analyst role, and graduate assistant and then an analyst role. So Spencer and Blair spoke the same language. Spencer was a really natural fit as a young developing offensive line coach for Blair Peterson's offense, and they both, I appreciate the work that they did last year. Like I said, we're all responsible for the lack of success last year. There's no finger pointing on my part. But then, you know, when Blair decided to get out of the business, and now Justin Walterscheid steps in as the offensive coordinator. Okay, there's a different dynamic in history there. Justin Walterscheid worked with Nick Nissen, our tight ends coach, last year at Southern Utah. Had success with Nick Nissen. Nick Nissen is not a young necessarily offensive line coach anymore. He's got years and years of experience, a decade of experience at the Division II level coaching offensive line. And so Justin decided, hey, I would like to have Nick as my offensive line coach. And if you know anything about offensive line dynamics, like, offensive line coaches, more than any other coach, want to be offensive line coaches forever. I mean, some of them become coordinators and head coaches, but like that's a fraternity there of tight-knit, technique-oriented, you know, de-emphasis on scheme, high emphasis on technique and personality development. Offensive line coaches are amazing at what they do. And so when I went to Spence and said, hey, Spence, got an opportunity for you. I want to move you to tight ends. I want to move Coach Nissen. Coach Walterscheid has tabbed Coach Nissen as the next O-line coach. Are you in or out on that? The initial disappointment from Spencer was obvious on his face. Like, really? You know, look, I took this young offensive line. We've battled through these hard times. We're about to break through and be a strength of this team. And I was like, I agree. And you're part of this. And any success that this offensive line and our team has in the future, you've got a piece of that thing. Absolutely. But here's where the program needs you right now. And there were a couple of days there where in my mind I thought, and I know Spencer, you know, like a brother at this point. We've worked together, we've bled together, we've won and lost. So I know his strengths, but I know his aspirations. And for a few days there I was wondering, okay, is he going to buy into this? Is he going to be the Spence that I know for these tight ends? And you know, just walking around practice the last few days, I can feel the excitement in him. Like, oh, okay, wait, this is an opportunity. This is, number one, this is reality. Nick's now the offensive line coach. I got to support him. But number two, this is an opportunity. I'm now involved in the passing game. I'm seeing the offense from a different level. I'm working with a different type of athlete. And I can just see the way he's bought in. And I think he's just been a tremendous example for our team to see, because we change their roles all the time. We change guys' positions. We change their spot on the depth chart. And their reaction to that is really where the growth lies. And Spencer's reaction has been amazing. And Nick has really taken over from where Spence had the offensive line and raised the level, which is the expectation. Not that's not a detriment to the job Spence did. It's just the job of any new coach to build upon what's been established.
I think that one's that can be a tough one too, because obviously the guys on your staff, you believe in them. You brought them in for a reason. But we always talk about this in sports where it's, hey, it's about the fit too. You got to make sure it's the right fit, given the right situation, the right scheme and all that. So sometimes you're moving those coaches around to make sure they're fitting with this group of guys, this certain scheme, that offensive coordinator. Maybe they gel a little bit better. Maybe this O-line coach really sees eye to eye with that OC too. So there's a few dynamics there that you have to battle through.
Absolutely. And you know, I couldn't have predicted that Blair Peterson would come in as an established offensive coordinator who's been in the business a long time, puts that kind of passion and energy into it that I've seen over the years, worked with him, worked alongside of him. I couldn't have predicted that he would get out of football. But what I can tell you is I've seen, you know, I've been at the jobs where, you know, even when you have a bad year, you still win. And I've been at the jobs where it's an amazing accomplishment to have a winning season. You know, to make a run at a championship, and it doesn't happen very often. And this is one of those jobs. And I've seen these types of jobs break coaches, push coaches out of the business. And I think it's important for players to see that. I think it's important. It's an important part of their growth. Of look, every player on our roster, especially the offensive guys and the quarterbacks, they saw what Blair put into this. They saw how smart he was, intelligent, how hard he worked. How positive he was through hard times. He leaves a great legacy, even though he stepped away from the game, which if you don't know him and you're not in our building, you might just think, ah, this guy quit. You know, he quit on football. It's absolutely not. He threw his whole life at this and then made a decision like we all should every year. Okay, what's next? And I respect that a ton.
Do you have, I mean, what was ultimately that reasoning behind that? Was it just, hey, it's not really for me anymore? Again, you hear it with players sometimes, especially, you know, professional players, when they call it quits, they're like, yeah, the idea of doing the grind thing at this age or whatever, the games are great, the season's great, but I don't know if I want to get back in all the way. What was it? Do you have any details there when you guys obviously had that discussion?
Yeah, I mean, from a football standpoint, right? Okay, Blair Peterson is a well-rounded, amazing husband, father, friend. But it from a football standpoint, this season, this place, the obstacles that we have here broke him. Mm. He did not see the light at the end of the tunnel, and that's exactly the dynamic that I'm communicating to the players all the time. If you're at that point too, there's a better place for you. There's better life for you doing something else, right? This type of job is what drives me. The what we accomplished at Southern Utah, a very similar set of obstacles, a very similar challenge, to go and outright win the Big Sky. That is an accomplishment that doesn't happen very often. When we do that here, it's going to be the same. It's going to change a community. It's going to change a state. It's going to change lives. And that is the exact struggle that I signed up for. I didn't come in thinking this job was going to be easy. When this happens, the only feeling I'm going to have when we win that championship, it's not going to be celebration. It's only going to be relief. I know exactly what I signed up for, and I know how hard it's going to be, and I know how hard it is every single day, and I can absolutely relate to Blair, but I can tell you I'm in it all the way.
How tough on that? How tough on that situation? How difficult was that for you? I mean, you've got a goal, you've got a mission, you got a guy you believe in, but as you said, he's not quite seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. Does that rock you, or are you just so driven with this goal that it's like, okay, next guy? I mean, how tough was that?
And I stood up, gave him a hug, thanked him for what he accomplished. And if you're not in it with us, you think, you guys didn't accomplish anything. You just had a winless season. I know the progress that our team made under Blair's leadership, that our offense made under Blair's leadership. I know the things that we learned. He worked until his very last moment when he left. You know, when we got to the end of the season, I had some direction that I thought our offense should take. Not a 180, but just, you know, minor corrections that we make mm-hmm. after every game. He worked until the very last moment and said, you know, hey, I think you're really on the right track, and here's what I, you know, what the based on the feedback you gave me, here's the direction that I see some of this offense going. He left that on the board for the next guy. No, it did not rock me in any way. It's part of this process. I couldn't have predicted that guy, that moment, that season, of course, right? Like, but I've been through this. I know what it takes to build an organization. You build an organization from the ground up. There is deep digging. There is dirt work. There are, and then as we start actually building this thing, there are false floors. There are breakthroughs and setbacks. Mm. I mean, and I've lived them. I don't want to talk, you know, now too much about Southern Utah, but there are. I can give you like direct parallels to, you know, everything that we're going through. I've been through it before, seen the other side of it. I know how to get through it, and I'm not saying that it's easy. I gotta pick myself up every single morning for this task at hand. It's a huge task. But make no mistake, when we win the championship, it's not going to be like when Montana wins the championship. It's not going to be like when Montana State wins the championship. We're going to change lives.
Well, we know, again, I wasn't in Greeley at that time, but you still hear it. You hear about, you know, the D2 championships. We have a picture in on the wall here at the station. You hear about it all the time. Community members up here, that was a powerful time in Greeley, Colorado. It really was. And some great players, not only great players, but great community leaders that are working in Greeley and Northern Colorado to this day were on that football team. I'm astonished. I'll go by and look at faces and names and then go, wait a second, that guy owns this business. That guy's doing this. That guy played when he went pro. So I know just from the stories how much of a lasting impact that can have to do it at this level in the Big Sky. Oh, I can't even imagine.
The legacy exists, and it's not like a haunting legacy of, oh man, like look what we did. Why can't you guys do that? We are Division I now. We are in the Big Sky because of what those guys accomplished back then. And so anything that we accomplish here in terms of success at the FCS level, championships and playoffs and the national championships, anything that we accomplish, those guys that fought for that Division II championship, they built it. They built it. We are right now walking on the foundation that they built.
And I love to hear you say that too. And I know it's something that's important to you because, you know, the history of the program and just connecting, reaching out. That's what people want. You see so many guys get disconnected from their college, their school. And it's all it would have taken is one guy, a coach, AD, whatever, to just reach out and say exactly what you just said. Couldn't be here without those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I feel it. It's not talk. It's not something I, you know, picked up from social media or something. I feel the pressure. I have brought in a lot of the guys from that Division II era. Division II is really, that's really the wrong way to say it. It just kind of comes out of my mouth because that's when the success was, mm-hmm. right? But I should just say from the successful era, like they were Division II as a classification. Who cares? Like nobody cares. The classification, they had a schedule, they won their schedule, they went to the playoffs and kicked butt and went all the way through. Like, that's exactly what we're trying to accomplish regardless of division.
Coach, just a couple of minutes left here. I know we wanted to get into the UNC administration and like the size of the support, the roster size, and then the support overall from the administration.
Yeah, a lot of changes in college football. So for a long time around here, you know, in the attempt to try to balance Title IX, right? We have as an athletic department, we sponsor more than just the Big Sky core sports, and so we have a couple of extra men's sports, so wrestling and baseball, that have a great history and tradition here in Greeley. They bring positives to the university, right? And but you know, the unintended consequences of Title IX sometimes is you know, sports get pointed to as, oh, well, this, you know, this sport is imbalancing us. This sport is costing resources, and we don't have a lot of resources. Well, I never like to think that way. Like, right? What's the reality? What are we trying to accomplish here? Well, we're trying to accomplish championships in football, baseball, wrestling, and all of our other sports. Okay, let's go get it. It doesn't matter what we have, what we don't have. But for a long time, football was operating a little bit under the number of total student athletes that most teams in FCS were, and certainly all the teams in the Big Sky were operating with. So we had a roster of 100 last year. Other teams in the Big Sky were at 110. And so we started to talk about that, Darren Dunn and I first. And to Darren's credit, you know, he's like at the end of the season, I mean, you know, I'm worried about just, you know, him calling me in and saying, hey, unacceptable results on the season. Mm. He's believing 100%. His first question was, what can I do better? What can me and my staff do better? What do we need? And I said, can we look at finding a way to get 10 more players? And that's like, hey, that's a lot more than 10 football players, because we got to balance that out on the women's side. So now we're talking about increasing rosters on the women's side, adding sports on the women's side, reevaluating our Title IX compliance, right? Because there's like three different prongs on Title IX. It's not just a hard number of participants. There's a lot to consider there. That was a huge ask that I made to Darren, and one that he can't make on his own, right? He's got bosses, and he's got people that are looking at it at the job that he does and the way he sets up the organization. So he worked and went to, you know, his boss and Andy Feinstein and the whole president's council, and they found a way to get to 110. And almost on the day it happened, the NCAA changed the game and said, you can now go to 120.
You say, hey, Darren, follow up on that.
So here's what I'm dealing with, a competent and competitive administration, because Darren contacted me before I knew that the rule was in place. And he said, hey, it went to 120. We got to find a way to get to 120. And I said, really? Are you serious? And so yeah, now we're finding a way to get these players in a locker room. We got to buy more helmets now. We have to add resources on the women's side to balance all that out with new sports or new participation. I mean, there is so much going on above my head to support UNC football. And I think it's really important that people understand that when we do break through and we do bring a lot of pride to this community, the UNC football community and the university, people need to know that it's not the quarterback, it's not the head coach, it's just a whole army moving forward, and a lot of them aren't even standing on that game day field. They don't hoist the trophy, but they're leading from an anonymous spot in a lot of ways when you're an athletic director and a college president.
I'm glad you went there too with that. I know we got a break here, Coach, but you know, people love to criticize athletic directors. They love, it's wins and losses. That's what they look at. They don't look at all the other things that go into it. So hearing that he's giving you that support here, you are thinking, hey man, what's going to happen here? We had a rough season. What's going to happen? And it's, how can I support you more? How can we grow with this? That's one thing I've really appreciated about this administration is, and I think a lot of the coaches appreciate that too. It's why they like it here. There's a lot of talent in Greeley, Colorado, but they also look at it and say, hey, we got a place where we feel comfortable and we can grow. And now you're getting a guy like Darren that says, hey, you know, I'm not going to sit here and talk about what went wrong. We're going to look at what can we do to get better? What do you need from me? And I think that's a really significant thing. It's something worth noting for sure. So I'm glad you went there.
I couldn't be happier with the support from the top down. There's absolutely no question in my mind that we have what we need. We don't have what other teams have. We don't have the same resources, right? So let's just own that and not dwell on it, not talk about it. But we have the support. We have, and most importantly, we have what we need to win, and we will win.
One, I just want to make this one note, because Greeley, this is a community. It's not just UNC. It's not just KFK, whatever. It's a community. I'm not going to give too much information, but I had a great conversation with the folks that run the Greeley Stampede. Same kind of thing you're saying is what they say. You know, hey, we don't have the resources that Cheyenne Frontier Day has, but we have what we have, and we're going to try to make the best of it. And that's what, if you get that collective attitude going on in this community, then man, something could really, really explode. Yeah. So it does, it you're hearing it all over. Greeley is a beautiful place and it's growing, but maybe not fast enough for some. And once it gets to that point, though, UNC, Greeley Stampede, hopefully KFK, all these entities will be there to, kind of reap the benefits from all that hard work.
Yeah. What great business, just stood in their place in line and just accepted the status quo, right? Like, oh, well, here's our resources, here's our place on the pecking order, on the food chain,
yeah.
And we're just gonna sit right here. Like, any success story that you hear about in business and football for me as a head coach is I'm running a business here. And absolutely inspired by those stories, and we are not accepting our place on the pecking order. That's what's going to make it such an amazing story when it all comes together.
And one of the most refreshing things from you and one of the great reasons for this podcast is you recognize the challenges. You really recognize the challenges, but you're not shying away from them. A lot of coaches will either say, oh, yeah, it's not that big a deal, whatever, I've seen worse, or it's nobody can win here. You know, this is impossible. And you're in the middle. You're at that point where it's like, hey, there are challenges, but this isn't something we can't overcome. And that's, I love that.
I'm motivated by it every single day. Gets me up in the morning.
Speaking of motivation, I know you got to get your pump on. You got to get your lift on, Coach. Coming up, is it Arms Day or?
Yeah, well, Wednesday's a little bit of a regeneration day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're in there. We're working hard. We get a sweat in, but it's preparing for another difficult lift tomorrow. There were two difficult lifts in a row on Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday's kind of what we call a regeneration.
All right. Well, we'll let you get at it, Coach. Always appreciate it. Next one's a big one because we're hitting double digits. Episode 10.
Wow.
Coming up. So we're looking forward to that. We'll get right back after into the spring ball mode. I love it. Leading up to the big spring game coming up in a couple of weeks.
Awesome. Can't wait. Thanks for all your efforts on this.
All right, Coach, we'll let you get back at it. Football 52 and all things UNC football podcast. We'll have episode 10 for you next week. That'll do it from us.